Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood Strauss. I have no idea when this podcast is being posted. It's either going to be Wednesday or Thursday, but it will be posted. How's it going?
That gives me a high degree of confidence, Zach. It's going well.
I haven't decided because I'm also doing a solo pod after we're done. And I haven't decided which one to post yet. So this could be old news. It could be new news. Who knows?
I worry about you, Zach, as a friend. I worry about these solo pods where you're talking to yourself for an hour. I just don't know if that's good for a human being's sanity.
No, it's not at all.
No, at all.
It's definitely not good. The weird part is I've yet to really do it, but there are times where I will talk to myself and get in an argument with myself, and I'm worried that that's going to happen. That's going to happen with the next one.
That's going to make it more entertaining. That might be good. That will be your Wilson. That will be your volleyball that you look to for comfort, your alter ego, your other personality, whom you can argue with. I think that's a healthy development. I would encourage that one.
I wouldn't call it healthy. I don't think it's a healthy development. I think it's just a development.
I'm just waiting for the other you to jump in and say it's a very healthy development.
I was at the Wolves Rockets game the other night, and that just reminded me of, I don't know why talking to yourself, but there was a moment where JJ Barea tried to challenge Dwight Howard. And it ended up in the Rockets bench. Dwight Howard just slapped it away. And Steve McPherson made a comment of like that little devil on JJ Barea's shoulder is saying like, hey, you still could have had that. Like that's a good shot to make. And then I made a joke about like, yeah, the devil on his other shoulder was like, yeah, high five. That's how I imagine JJ Barea at this point.
Bob.
Yeah. JJ Barea at this point is just two devils on his shoulders.
Well, and what I love is that those devils will look exactly like JJ Barea because he looks a little demonic. Let's face it. I don't want to insult the man.
Oh, okay.
But he looks a little devilish or a little gremlin-like.
I could see that. I can see that. He kind of has pointy ears, right?
Yeah.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. He's got them devil ears.
Devil ears, yeah. Speaking of burning in hell.
Oh.
Mark Jackson doesn't want people to burn in hell?
He's very much against that.
He's a very religious man. He's also very much like in his own way right now, it seems like.
Yeah. That was interesting. That was pretty interesting.
I don't fully understand. I haven't really been following it, so I'd like you to clue me in on this entire Mark Jackson, Andrew Bogut media menage a trois.
Yeah, it was interesting, especially in the wake of a blowout, to have what happened happen. So here's the expository on it. In the pregame of the Sixers game, Sixers-Warriors, Mark Jackson was asked about Bogut's unavailability. Now, Bogut looked really good in his last game since missing a few with this shoulder injury.
Yes.
And there's nothing in the MRI that we know of to suggest this really tangible injury. But we also know that Bogut's been banged up before and that he's had issues. So he's not playing. And Jackson said something to the effect of he didn't know how he heard it. It didn't happen in a game or practice. Maybe it happened sleeping. Maybe it happened getting up sleeping. So it seemed like he was taking a little shot. Now, I can't tell you what the intent was there, but it was odd.
That's a weird joke to make.
Yeah, especially because he wasn't smiling. So that was a...
So not so much a joke.
Yeah. It was strange. And so what ended up happening was Rusty Simmons of the Chronicle ended up tweeting it out. And I don't know if that's how Bogut knew about it. I don't know how he knew about it. It might just be because it's a public press conference and word got back to him however the way. Bogut flagged down the beat reporters and said that it was ridiculous and that he didn't hurt himself sleeping and really pushed back against what Jackson said in this emphatic way that you don't usually see players doing publicly against their coaches. And that was the little prelude to drama. So this game happens. It's a blowout. They kill the Sixers by 43 points. And in the post-game press conference, Jackson begins with it. He begins with a statement on this issue with Bogut. That's the first thing he addresses. So what's funny in all this, as a side note, is I'm seeing a lot of pushback against the media stirring up controversy. And this is, you guys, you're making something out of nothing. Let's review the steps I've talked about so far.
Sure.
Jackson said something about Bogut. Bogut isn't saying that the media told him. Bogut responds to Jackson by talking to the media about it. then Jackson responds to Bogut in the public press conference. So far, I don't really see the media stirring up a whole lot.
No.
I just see us just kind of being there.
Okay.
While this is unfolding. So Jackson begins with a statement, and it is utterly defiant about how his words, don't twist my words. He said defiantly, do not twist my words. I will never throw a player under the bus. There will never be a problem in my locker room. I'm paraphrasing some of this, but that's the gist of it. That to me was also odd, too, because I know that Jackson's a religious man, but I didn't know he was psychic. I didn't know that he could see into the future.
Sure.
And really foresee that there would be no problem in his locker room, combined with how this would seem to be a problem in his locker room. It seems like we're talking about one right now. So, okay, be that as it may. So then there are a few questions about the Sixers, and I asked Jackson, because I'm curious about this, because I don't understand how any words are twisted. How exactly were your words twisted? And Jackson's response to that was lengthy. I can't exactly unpack the whole thing, but he was saying that he said it was legitimate, that the injury was legitimate, and that should have been focused on, that he said it was a legitimate injury after talking about the whole bed situation. And he was asked then by Steve Berman of Bay Area, a sports guy, about whether or not he talked to Bogut after the game. He said he did, and then there was just this defiance happening, and let me find the quote, where he goes, it's a fun time, and then laughs. I mean, we are 10 games over 500. Some of you guys haven't seen that in a long, long time, so keep on acting like you have. And if it sounds like I'm adding some sort of emphasis, I am, because it was there. It was intense. It was a really intense press conference.
That's a really weird thing to say.
Yeah.
That's a weird, like, how you like me now.
Yeah, yeah. I've done this for you, so why are you criticizing?
Right.
And there was also, he was speaking about how he'll never throw the player under the bus and how that will be true until someone else is sitting here. And I'm just thinking, why are we talking about that right now? What is going on with you in this organization? And so the backdrop to all this that Kevin Draper had written about today in a summary, there's this backdrop of, I don't know what qualifies a coach for the hot seat. I don't know how that gets determined, but here's what I know. Jackson doesn't have the lucrative extension that he wants. So he has another year after the season is over, but so do pretty much all coaches, because otherwise you're a total lame duck.
Right.
So he has that year after this one, but he doesn't have the lucrative contract he wants. He's one of the lower paid coaches. He doesn't like that at all. And so we also know that Lacob isn't entirely happy with the situation. Lacob is super involved. He's at every Warriors game. He celebrates like crazy. And through this run of losses at home, he's been making various gesticulations, and he's not happy. And an article just came out where Tim Kawakami was interviewing Lacob, and he gave some lukewarm praise and essentially said that he was disappointed in a lot of what the team was doing, and that his expectation was for them to be a top four seed. So read between the lines, you know?
Yeah. They are 10 games over 500.
This is true.
That's true. They're 31-21, which is very good.
Yeah.
There are only a few teams in the league that are better than that.
This is very true.
Unfortunately,
Jackson did state a fact.
Unfortunately, most of them are in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
So
the West is going to get people fired.
Right. I guess that's the problem. They're four games behind the four seed, which is the Clippers. So win the division, you win the four seed, right?
Yeah.
This season. They're not out of it by any means. They can definitely win the division, get the four seed. Here's the problem with that. So let's say they get up there and they beat the Clippers for the division, end up in the four seed, and that means they end up playing the Clippers or the Rockets in the first round, if everything holds true.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to face any of those teams in the first round if I'm the Warriors. I would want to face the Blazers, which they're set up to, and that's not to say like the Blazers can't beat them. I just think that you would take the team with inexperience, right?
And they're set up well to beat the Blazers.
I think so, yeah.
Lee isn't a good defensive player, but he plays good enough post defense, and I'm sure Aldridge will have a good series, but
they have a lot of bigs to throw at Aldridge. I mean, not that Aldridge can't handle them, but that you at least have a bunch of fresh bodies you can throw at him and make them work.
Yeah, I believe they might have crushed them last time the Blazers were at Oracle, so it's that would be the matchup they would want.
Now
so
that's clearly projecting 2 months of like, oh, nothing's gonna change, but I guess it to me it's weird to have. Well, one, it's I'm still hung up on this Mark Jackson "How You Like Me Now,"
yeah,
reaction. That's a very like, I don't have anything else to say, so I'm just gonna like flex my arm at you.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's weird. And then the idea of like we have to be a four seed, or like we're projected to be a four seed. I personally would say like I would wait till the end of the season and be like, all right, this is how it looks like our path to the. To the playoffs looks. Clearly, you'd rather have home court advantage than not, but you can take care of all that pretty easily by winning one game on the road.
Yeah, and you can, and I would encourage, because I'm talking extemporaneously here, I would encourage people to just read the full context of...
Don't twist any words.
Of Tim Kawakami's Lacob interview, and see what you think about me characterizing it as lukewarm praise, him being... slightly disappointed with where the team is. It was not a vote of confidence. The big vote of confidence, and in response to a lot of people saying that I'm making all this of this, and all so are all these other media types with Jackson, Lacob could end this right now by giving Jackson an extension. But
sure.
That's not happening. That's what creates the hot seat. The hot seat isn't created by
but
media
why do you think
making
that,
up things.
Why do you think that isn't happening? They have been... I mean, he took his lumps in the first year. Last year, they experienced unexpected success getting to the second round. And then this year, they're a top six team in the West, which is good. What's wrong? I guess what's wrong with Mark Jackson's coaching job is what I'm asking.
Well, I suppose that Lacob doesn't entirely trust him, and it's just about trust. He doesn't trust, and I'm not exactly sure why. It might just be a division where Jackson is the player's coach. That's how he sells himself, but he's not boys with Lacob and Myers. I see Lacob and Myers together all the time. I don't necessarily see them with Jackson all the time. When we were at Summer League, I would see Myers and Lacob. I wouldn't see Jackson hanging out with them. So
okay.
That might be part of it, where they're just different people. You know, Lacob is a libertarian Jewish dude. Jackson is an ultra-religious Christian dude. I'm not saying that's the reason that they're not especially outwardly close, but there just might be a lack of comfort there, and they haven't developed a friendship. I'm merely spouting hypothetically here, and I don't have any information to suggest that. But that is a bit odd, right? We can talk about the religious aspect here, where Jackson makes so much of it about religion, talks religion all the time, prays to Jesus, prays to God, and meanwhile the owner of the team doesn't share his religion, and to my knowledge isn't especially religious, and I sometimes wonder if he got a bit more than he bargained for in that respect.
Sure.
He wasn't expecting it to become church.
If he's not religious, then it shouldn't matter. I mean, if he was like a devout person with, you know, in Judaism, like really like all about Judaism, like then I guess I could see how perhaps it would rub the wrong way. But if he's not all that religious, which we're assuming here,
yeah.
To me, that it wouldn't matter then.
Yeah, I don't think it would matter, but there's this aspect where Jackson doesn't totally fit, and it's all great when he's winning. It's all great when he's winning.
Yeah, I mean that's really the key, is you're not winning as much as your boss wants you to. So
yeah, that's the main thing. But there's this other aspect of all things being equal. This is the most secular region in America. So the fan base, the Atlantic cities. They have data on this where only 23% of people in the Bay Area claim to be very religious, and that's just people claiming to be very religious,
okay.
Not even the Christian aspect. I can feel your discomfort on the other end, Zach.
No, it's not discomfort.
You're tiptoeing.
It's a
you're
weird...
hopscotching through landmines.
No. I'll say anything that... I don't mind getting in trouble. I'm fine with that. I think it's... I don't know. It's a weird situation. Like, 2 months ago, everything was yay area. You know? And now it's Boo Area. Now it's Boo Area.
Boo Area. You know what's also funny here? Is when I look at this quote, what's so funny is that Jackson began his post-game press conference as this defiant thing about how his words were twisted. But the thing about the quote that's so funny as I look to it is, before I get to Mo, I just want to address something from earlier, and he means Mo Spates. I love that as an intro to anything serious. Before I get to Maurice Spates, let me just say.
I think Maurice Spates, like, either said it on the radio or maybe just said it on Twitter or something like that. But he was like, basically, like, I can't believe I, you know, the night I had, shout out to Doug Collins.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Oh, my God. What a Spates game. Are you with me on this where Spates is incredibly frustrating and not altogether good, but you find him hilarious? Or do you just get bummed out watching him?
I find him very entertaining for all the wrong reasons.
Oh, me too. Me too.
I don't find him to be particularly good. And even someone, because I think I just, maybe it was with you, I just trashed him on the podcast saying he's not a good player. And then he had that game a couple days later. And, you know, some fan asked me, like, oh, do you still think Spates? I was like, yes, he's had good games before. He still sucks overall.
Yeah. It was funny too, because I like the idea of him running elevator doors as he was having the game of his life against the point shaving Sixers.
Shaving.
Like, I'm just saying it looks like they're doing that. I'm not accusing. I'm just saying that it looks like they're not
trying. So far, we're about 15 minutes in, and so far you've accused a religious uprising in the Warriors and point shaving from a Sixers team.
It's a battle of religion. All I'm saying is this, where they might be slightly different people in terms of what's super important to them. That's all I'm saying. And
yeah.
It might not have anything to do with it. But if we wanna backtrack and give some more expository to this situation, Bogut and Biedrins were the only two people who didn't go to chapel before games, to my knowledge, last season. So Bogut wouldn't seem to be on board with this the team is church situation. A lot of other players are religious on the team. Jermaine O'Neal talks about religion extensively, for instance. All of them seem to go to chapel before games. So that might play into, if there is a division between Bogut and Jackson, that might be part of it. The other part of it is that there's this funny thing in the NBA where the coach is supposed to be the boss. That's what the org chart looks like, except it's total BS. It's not true at all.
Right.
And Bogut is Jackson's boss now. He signed that extension. He makes all this money. He makes more money than Jackson. He makes it for longer, and Jackson, more importantly, needs him. He needs him. He might be the best defensive player in the conference. So that might add to whatever tension is here, if there is tension. I keep couching things in allegedly that kind of speak. But it might add to it, because let's say from Jackson's perspective, he needs to win games. He's on a warming seat, and Bogut is going, I don't want to play against Phoenix. I'm not really feeling it. Don't really feel it. I kind of want to be my own personal Popovich and kind of rest certain games when I want. I can see from that perspective, from Jackson's perspective, being a little bit antsy and maybe being a little angry about that.
I love the idea of players having to go to chapel just to make sure, like, their spots in the rotation.
You like that idea? That sounds
like a
lawsuit.
No, because it does sound like a lawsuit, but it's not my lawsuit, so I don't care. But yeah. I do like that idea, because it reminds me of, like, you know, I went to Catholic school from kindergarten through high school, and there were times where I was religious. There was the majority of the time I was not a religious person, and I would just, like, I had to go to church, and I had to go to mass, and I had to do all these things, and I'm just, like, the whole time I'm just waiting to get through it just so I can get on with my day. And what if that's what it's like to be a Golden State Warrior?
It might be. I had the opposite, where I was in an aftercare program that was associated with a church, but my father didn't let me participate in the Christmas pageant, so everybody would go across the street to where the church was. And I was just watched. It was very sad. Like a prisoner, one counselor would just watch me.
Let me tell you, I was in many a Christmas pageant.
Yeah.
Played Joseph one year.
Ah.
How about that?
Mm.
The stepfather of Jesus.
Did you get to wear a Technicolor dream coat?
No.
Is that a Jacob? How does that work?
I think it was just like a cloth. I think I just had a cloth with a hole cut in it for my head.
No pimp's coat?
No pimp's coat, no. Just the, you know, your basic Joseph garb.
Well, that sounds more fun. I ended up reading everything in there. I read "Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret," but about girls coming of age. I remember that's a tangible memory I have.
I mean, that actually explains a lot. Now that everything's starting to come together,
that explains why I put my hair in a French braid on occasion, because that seemed to be a signifier of womanhood, and that became very important to me. Back then, but moving on, I do this issue of whether or not players have to be religious to feel included is a bit problematic. I just feel as though we don't know enough about the dynamics internally to know how big an issue it is, or if it's problematic.
Right. I think that, well, that would just be such a weird problem to have. What has happened? I mean, I kind of feel like...
Wait. I want to write a blog post called, "Are You There, God? It's Me, Mark Jackson." But continue.
Write that down. I think, I don't know. I feel like people thought Mark Jackson was going to be really bad, right? Because they thought his commentary was really bad.
True. ESPN, an ESPN chip just went off in my brain. What are you talking about?
No, Zach? I'm just talking about the collective, not what you felt.
Oh, yeah. Not
no, you knew great. You knew it'd be great.
Man down.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly. Mama, there goes that mass.
There you go.
Okay, so people assumed he was going to be bad because they didn't like his commentary. And then I think for the most part, we just thought it would be weird. Like, it would be a weird experience, a guy who doesn't have... It's always weird a guy who doesn't have coaching experience gets put into a coaching role.
Yeah.
So that's
Jason
weird.
Kidd.
Turns out, exactly. Turns out it is pretty weird. Like, he hasn't been bad by any means. He was great in... I thought he was great in how he coached the team last year. You may have differing opinions on that, but I've
been more pro-Jackson than anti-Jackson, and I think other Bay Area media people have been like that too, so that's why it's weird to lash out on at them, because they've been quite friendly, more so than the fan base. Again, I do believe that the religious aspect, it annoys certain people in the fan base and makes
that's always going, like, some people get really angry when religion and sports get put together.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole Tim Tebow thing. I mean, Ray Lewis thanking God for everything. I guess maybe it's primarily with football. I feel like there was some NBA player who was thanking God a lot, like a really good player. Was it Durant early on?
It might have been Durant. Dwight Howard. People got mad because they felt Dwight Howard was a hypocrite.
Well, he was
because he had certain dalliances. And that plays into the Jackson situation.
Dalliances. I mean,
you want to talk about how the Bay Area media has been fairly friendly. If I was Jackson, I might not be lashing out at how the media is portraying things, considering what we don't ask him about.
I love dalliances.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
Dropped a little dalliance on you. Yeah. So I think that there's an aspect of people also thinking that there is religious hypocrisy going on. And
that's
not something I care about at all, but it plays into how the fans feel about it. As far as his coaching goes, last year I thought he did a really good job. He made the necessary adjustment in the Denver series. He might have been inclined to say, hey, on the depth chart, the situation is when David Lee goes down, Landry replaces him. We're going with Landry in the David Lee role. Instead, he looked at the situation and he said, let's go small. Let's change our dynamic of what we're doing. And that won the series. So that's big. That was huge.
Would you say he hasn't been a good coach this year?
Is it fair to not know? Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm more than happy with a measured sports take.
Is it okay to not know? I have complaints. I have things I think they should be doing better, and disagreements.
Like not having David Lee on the team?
I never said that. Well, maybe I did.
No, I think you specifically wrote an article saying they should trade David Lee.
I might have said that. Might have been the headline of the article.
on the worldwide leader in sports.
Zach, do not twist my words. I would never throw David Lee under the bus. Do not twist my words.
You've got over 15,000 Twitter followers, which not a lot of people have had around here. So you're welcome for that.
It's actually untrue. I'm probably on the low end of your guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I might have said that. No, I think my complaints would be that they ask too much of certain players, like how Klay Thompson. I want Klay Thompson to be Kyle Korver. Less of Klay would be more of Klay. Be Kyle Korver. But instead, they throw the ball to him and say, make something happen.
I love that you. I love the faux humility you just showed, because you do have over 15,000 followers, and I know you knew that.
Oh, this is just your tactic, your ploy for people looking at how you have even more, Zach. I see this game.
No. I don't think there's any necessity to me to mention I have double that. That's not that's not important. That's neither here nor there. Depending on how much time I have, I may just edit that whole part out of the podcast, because it's that factoid. I mean, it is a factoid, but there's no reason to include that.
You should probably beep it out, and then people will be even more intrigued to visit your page just to check it out.
Yeah, maybe. That would be something. That's a decision.
I'm for that. I'm for that as a tactic.
Yeah.
So I think that there's an aversion to Jackson that's not necessarily about the coaching, and I hate to bring race into it, but I think that there is an element of fans who don't have as much respect for black coaches as they perhaps should, and that unfortunately is part of the discourse. What'd you say?
I'm trying to think of black coaches that maybe I could look back and think, oh, I wonder if that's true.
Well, I've just heard that there are more emails from certain writers. I've heard that there's more emails, there's more consternation. I know black beat reporters who feel that's the case.
Okay.
Who feel that this is good, where you can just pass off your personal opinion onto anonymous people, you know, like how you really feel about it. You can just sort of say, oh, that's what they think. So, you know, they have credence on it. But I do think there's an element of that. I do think it's harder. And part of it is racism. And part of it is also that it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy or self-fulfilling perception, where if you have a bunch of white coaches and for years and years a majority of coaches have been white, then that's what a coach looks like to people. He's an old crusty white man, and that guy is coach. And
sure,
if you have different people who look differently, there's a sense of, oh, well, that doesn't really fit. And fortunately, I do think that's changing. We have, I believe, more black coaches than ever. Recently, just a few years ago, it was 2/3 white. White American. That's the other thing too. The NBA doesn't really experiment with European coaches either, which they probably should, and that would seem to be another bias.
There are the European coaches that people love. I do wonder though, like, why do we think that they deserve a shot? Just because it would be new.
D'Antoni, he's not European, but he brought a European style.
Sure.
And all this cool stuff happens. So there's a sense of, maybe there are all these novel concepts out there, and it would catch other teams by surprise. So why not go with it?
Do you think American players would respect foreign coaches?
That's a great question. Oh man, I can see Dwight Howard offending so many people.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Depending on where his coach is from.
Yeah, I feel like if you gave him a Turkish coach, things would go really poorly.
Oh, his imitation would be just so culturally interesting.
Well, he would be doing nothing but Greek imitations for the Turkish coach, which would that's a whole can of worms right there.
You'd be watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding on loop,
yeah,
just to get the drop on it.
Right. He'd be calling everybody Balky.
So, yeah, I think that, like a lot of this stuff, it just takes time. It just takes time for people to reorient what's normal to them. And we're going to see that with Michael Sam in the NFL and whenever there's a gay player too. I'm just throwing all the landmines your way, Zach. I'm just throwing you grenades and landmines all throughout this. But yeah, like right now it's a big deal and certain players might have an aversion to it and there's discomfort. But as it becomes normalized, as it becomes normal, then that won't happen. So I think if you brought over a European coach, it would be weird for some players, and they might not react as they should. But as it became more of a trend, nobody would care.
I agree with that. Foreign gifts are, you know, we have monuments like the Statue of Liberty, which is a foreign gift. But the monument I want to talk about is Mount Rushmore.
Oh, God, he strikes again.
How about that?
Strikes again.
There's this whole discussion that I think you can guess I feel largely neutral about. But the whole idea of, like, the Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have a problem that LeBron James said he should be on there?
Wait, I like the idea of a neutral Rushmore that you're creating. And it's just this bland face. It looks like, you know, those And One t-shirts, that face?
Yeah.
Remember that guy?
I would just have my four top And One t-shirts as my Mount Rushmore.
They'd be saying some stupid taunt on the court,
right,
about how they're going to take your girl or who knows what. Who knows what was on those shirts? that alternative to Nike that when you were 12 or 13 years old, you thought that was really badass, that was really cool, the N1 shirts. Yeah, maybe four of those blank faces, that would be Zach Harper's Mount Rushmore, right? Neutral Rushmore.
I think so. Yeah, the oh God, what was the one about calling your girl? What was that one? I got her number or something. Oh God.
Zach, if you,
I know
if
I owned
you,
it.
If you were an eccentric billionaire, like in Richie Rich, would you have Ricky Davis on this mountain chiseled in there? Maybe just his face?
Yes, of course. What kind of question is that?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Of course I would.
I hate when I do that. I'm sorry for that offensive, you know, that offensive question.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Who's on your Mount Rushmore?
My Mount Rushmore.
It's Jordan.
Yeah. Jordan, Russell, Magic, LeBron. That's my four.
Oh.
Yeah.
An exclusively black Mount Rushmore.
Oh, God.
Look at you.
Oh, what did I do to Larry? Why'd I do that?
Why can't we do half Larry, half Magic? Isn't that the way to get around it? Half faces?
Oh,
like those playoff commercials from a few years ago?
That'd be beautiful. It'd also be funny if they were just really close together, like Seth Rogen and James Franco in the Bound 2 video.
Who would be your Bound 2 NBA couple?
That's it right there. I mean, maybe currently DeMarcus Cousins and Isaiah Thomas come to mind.
That would be,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
For me, it'd have to be Steve Francis and Ketina Mobley.
Oh, that's a great one right there.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that quite a bit. Maybe Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson?
Oh, that's a very good one.
Thank you. Yeah. That's, maybe doing the little horn head thing they did. I sound so uncool.
I don't know. All right. I really can't say it on the podcast, but you can guess what that actually meant, right?
Yeah.
Because actually, I mean, I know. I've been told from several good sources what it is.
Can Vince Carter bring back the motorcycle?
He kind of does it, right?
Does he?
I don't know. He just doesn't dunk. He doesn't dunk anymore.
Can he do something? Can he do something now when he does a layup that's like John Deere firing something age appropriate?
What about
like a golf cart.
The lawnmower?
Yeah,
when he starts like revving up the lawnmower.
Yeah, he pulls the cord now instead of doing the two hands on the handlebar. He pulls the cord.
He does a very like dramatic like grasping of the because there's you have to pull the two bars together, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
you pull,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
you pull the cord. What if it's like a very dramatic like grasping of the two bars and then the cord rip?
And then he kind of holds his back like he might have thrown his back out.
that might happen anyway.
Yeah, it might happen anyway.
It should
be part of the celebration.
I was looking at a high school dunk contest, the McDonald's All-American high school dunk contest of his, and it was almost more impressive than his NBA one for the simple fact that it was just a bunch of power windmills.
Yeah.
Like, that's all. There wasn't a lot of trickery to it. It was just a lot of, like, look how high and how high I can jump and look how hard I can dunk.
And, frankly, that's why I'd want him in the Hall of Fame. That matters. If you're the best dunker of all time, that matters. That's a thing.
Well, and he had such an imprint on the league.
Yeah.
Like, he invented the necessity for the NBA on YouTube.
I thought you said the necessity for leaving Canada. That's what I thought you were going to say.
No, wouldn't that be Alonzo Mourning who just blocked it completely?
Oh, yeah. And Steve Francis, your guy, just want to go to Vancouver. Yeah. Your guy, Steve Francis. He's one of the players. I know with the Zach wheelhouse, the early 2000s, slightly inefficient, flashy, full of bravado. That's a wheelhouse. That's what you like.
Well,
you can't deny it.
No, I can't deny. No, I love Steve Francis. I just found it weird that you would assume that.
Yeah,
not weird, accusatory. I found it accusatory that you would assume that.
This from the man who accused me of playing like Monte Ellis the first time we stepped on the pickup court.
We hadn't even met.
Yeah,
we really
yeah.
hadn't met. I just recognized you, and I was trying to get in your head.
Yeah, it definitely worked.
It did, because you played like crap the rest of the time.
Well, it was also weird, because I if only I had that kind of speed. It was like an insult that I couldn't
It's like a very slow Monte Ellis.
I couldn't even fulfill the good part of the insult. The only thing I could come close to doing like him is eating a turkey sandwich before every game. That's the only thing I could
okay.
do
yeah.
to even imitate what he does. So you're Mount Rushmore, Jason Williams, Steve Francis.
No, Steve Francis doesn't make it.
But Jason Williams does, right?
Of course Jason Williams makes it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Sacramento area.
One of my least favorite jokes is whenever I tweet something about Jason Williams. there's a distinct difference in the way Jason Williams and the murderer Jason Williams and the analyst Jason Williams,
it's
very how they
confusing.
Spell their names. But yeah. There's a difference. Like, Jason, the flashy point guard, and Jason the murderer don't spell it the same way. So yeah. I will tweet something about Jason Williams, and I get a slew of responses of, like, oh, do you mean the murderer? And I just want to say, like, I would have spelled it like that, and then you could have made the joke. That bothers me.
Yeah, that's bothersome. It's a very serious topic. People shouldn't make jokes.
I was just about to make a joke.
I was going to the really dark place of imagining if Jason Williams was an assassin, the elbow pass guy, just all the weird ways. If there was an action movie that he starred in, like Double Team with Rodman, just the ways he'd shoot at people. You know, he would just go between the legs.
He would.
We talked about Bond last week. I feel like this would take Bond to another level.
It would. No, it certainly would. I made jokes. I was watching they did the draft where I think Jason Williams, the murderer, was drafted.
Which sounds like it's a dark topic, but it sounds like you're a Rucker Park announcer when you say that.
The murderer.
The murderer.
And so I was making jokes I think I made a joke of like doing his scouting report on Twitter and made some joke about must improve shot selection. Like, some awful joke like that.
Ooh.
Yeah, and not in good taste or what, but I got, there was a very prominent, but an official reporter who, like, DM'd me and started, like, chastising me about it.
Chastising?
Yeah.
It's an,
I won't say who, but it wouldn't stop me from making the joke, but I just, that was that point where I was kind of like, I do really have to watch what I say on here.
Yeah, I know. It's you get that little sense you shouldn't say that, or you should couch it in some way. But at the same time, you don't necessarily see how it will harm anything or matter in the world, other than it's not proper decorum. It's in that odd space, you know?
Right, yeah. No, it's definitely in that odd space.
Yeah. Or that's just me trying to rationalize it, because I like horrible jokes like that. You know, that's usually the type of jokes that people make to each other on Press Row, you know?
Right.
Like, how people were joking. People on Press Row were joking. I'm not saying that was one of them. We're joking about how funny it would have been if, when the Bobcats were blowing out the Warriors and Lake was helping to announce the game, if Lake was just incredibly angry, talking to the super starchy Bob Fitzgerald had just fired Jackson right then and there, just to see how Bob Fitzgerald would react to him, you know.
That would be pretty fantastic. I think my Mount Rushmore is definitely Jason Williams, the point guard.
Of course.
I would also include Robert Pack.
Oh, what a pick.
Larry Bird.
Eh.
Wow.
No.
Wow, you were just anti-Larry Bird. This is Isaiah Thomas all over again.
I love Larry Bird so much. No, it's not like Isaiah Thomas at all. Larry Bird was great. It's different from you choosing these novelty guys like Robert Pack. That's all I'm saying.
And then my last one would be Steph Curry.
Oh, my. Really?
Yes. I have my favorite passing point guard, or like my favorite flashy point guard of all time, which was Jason Williams. Mm-hmm. I have probably my favorite player/personality of all time, which is Larry Bird. My favorite novelty guard, which is Robert Pack, and then my favorite three-point shooter of all time, which is Steph Curry.
Man, Robert Pack's dunks were so cool. I'm going to YouTube that after this. That's what I want. With Steph Curry, I sometimes just don't want to admit that I love watching him play so much. there's a fan aspect to it. There really is, where I'm like, oh, he's doing this, and he's doing that, and here's the... And then I think sometimes when I'm watching these games, it's so cool to be in the building watching this. I've never seen this good a shooter before, and it just looks beautiful. And I sometimes struggle with containing my enthusiasm.
Yeah, when Rubio's running hot with his passing, I feel that way. And when Kevin Love is just going on scoring binges, I'm like, wow, this is actually like kind of incredible to watch. Not like a historic thing, but like this is it's fun to watch a guy play like this. And that's really the deal. And then when JJ Barea is extra bad, I think like, like I don't know that I'm ever going to see a player get this kind of leeway and play this poorly ever again. So I need to like kind of soak it in.
That's special in its own way. You know how I am. As long as you're feeling something, even if it's bad, just the purity of emotion is why we watch sports. So that Jay, you can't look askance at that. That Berea situation, that's something right there. And this is a little intriguing, not to bring this back up, but I remember you bristled, Zach, bristled with your beard, your beautiful beard, at the suggestion that Blake Griffin might be better than Kevin Love. But Blake Griffin, he's been killing it recently.
Yeah.
Does this change how you feel?
No, I bet Kevin Love's numbers wouldn't improve at all if he had a great team around him. I bet that wouldn't happen at all. He certainly wouldn't be playing at the high level that he's already playing, which is higher than Blake Griffin's.
I'm not sure it's the great team, though. It doesn't seem like a situation where Chris Paul was out, so Blake had to assume more responsibility, and that's why.
Yeah, but he's still got... I mean, he still has a much better team around him than what the Wolves put around Love, and that matters. Even without Chris Paul, like, that matters.
I would agree.
This is the thing that I've learned from watching Kevin Garnett toil here for 12 years, was the quality of teammates is probably the most underappreciated thing that any star... I mean, we always go like, oh, yeah, well, he's got better teammates around him now, or he's got all... you know. But no one actually, like, really looks into it. And the quality of teammates around you and the ability, like, to have teammates who can score. Like, looking at what LeBron did in Cleveland, his second-best player was either Mo Williams, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, or Anderson Varejao. And look what he did. That's incredible.
It's incredible. People joke about it, about how bad Cleveland looks, and I make jokes about how his greatest accomplishment is how good Cleveland was, terrible rosters when he was on. It really might be. It really might be. It was looked as an indictment that he never won with Cleveland, but in retrospect, after they fell apart and how bad the organization looks and how bad some of that talent looks, maybe that was his greatest accomplishment, even better than the two championships.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm definitely more sensitive to it because I saw Garnett go through it, and Garnett was my favorite player for, you know, 15 years, and then seeing, like, the whole LeBron scrutiny, and now Kevin Love gets the same scrutiny, and not that Kevin Love is in the realm with those two players, but I do think it, like, we get to a point where Kyrie Irving, if he doesn't get on a better team, or if they don't put a better team around him, we're going to start doing that with him. Like, we saw it almost immediately with John Wall of, oh, he's a number one pick, he's not making a difference, you know, he's not good. And I do think, like, I get sick of this guy isn't a winner when he doesn't have anything to help him win.
Especially when you could make the argument, your favorite phrase, that it's even harder to remain great when surrounded by crap, when surrounded by bad talent. If you believe, as Durant loves to say, iron sharpens iron, and that a culture of winning informs people how to have good habits, transcending all of that, remaining great like Kevin Garnett was when everybody else is terrible, that's very difficult to do, and that should perhaps be given more praise.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that I part of it is me hating the hot sports take of, like, this guy's not a winner. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Like, there are people who are like, Chris Paul's not a winner. I'm like, I don't know. He wins the majority of his games.
Yeah, he wins a lot of NBA basketball games.
Yeah, like, okay, not a lot of them have come in the postseason, but that's another guy where I'm like, what has he had to use? And it's not like he's always played in, like, the better conference with harder, you know, competition. You don't get a round off ever.
Well, they never really explain the theory for why he's not a winner. It's just that he's not a winner, and there's no because of this, because he is assists too much, like in the State Farm commercials. There's nothing like that happening, so it's a stupid, reflexive argument. I don't like it either.
It really does bother me that Chris and Cliff Paul's sons look exactly alike.
Yeah, that's not how it works. That's not how genetics work.
It just seems... I'm sure that's possible. It just seems highly unlikely.
It seems highly unlikely also that a bunch of people care about Cliff, and that there are people taking sides on both ends, and outside of a restaurant, people are holding up posters of Cliff Paul, the insurance guy. I don't understand how he managed to become so popular and what's resonating with America.
Right, and the throwback of him, like, handing an umbrella to people back when he owned his shop in, like, the 20s.
Yeah.
There's no way a black man owns a business that white people are happy to stand outside in the
1920s. Or that he has the exact genetic makeup of his future son. that doesn't make sense either. This black man, thankfully, is in a non-racist pocket of America in the 1920s.
Where was he? Where did he think he was?
But he's invented cloning.
But where was he in 1920? That
was Nova Scotia.
That's not America.
Does it have to be?
Well, I guess not. I guess he. Are we saying Chris and Cliff Paul are descendants of Canadians?
Maybe. I mean, how else do you explain these funky genetics? I don't think we have that in this country. Look, we had all sorts of theories on what was happening with England. Don't think that Canada's off our list of crazy theories.
That's true. The English responded.
Yeah, we wanted to clear some things up.
I have a handful of English followers I didn't know I had.
Did they correct us on anything, though? I think not.
No, they. I don't believe they did.
So all that's true. All that's true. Sir Soccer invented the sport of soccer because he preferred, you know, to keep his hands not dirty, and he liked to keep his feet healthy because he so loved to kick peasants in the feudal fields.
If I'm a Bobby,
yeah,
in England, but sure. But I would rather go by Robert.
Mm-hmm.
It would bother me that people still call me a Bobby because of my profession.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. I want to be a lawyer, not a barrister. You know.
Sure.
Yeah, come on. We invented this language, British. Take after us.
You know what's funny is we've been battling internet problems for like the last 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's finally cleared up now that we were like, oh, we should wrap this up and just cut our losses with what we have.
Yeah, that's exactly how. Well, you know what I think? I think the gods want us to talk about frivolous non-basketball things.
Maybe that's what. Maybe we're talking too much basketball.
Yeah, and the gods responded in anger.
Yeah,
our internet.
You were spouting off about religious wars.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe that was part of it too. Oh, Mark Jackson. Maybe this is.
Oh.
I feel the power.
Okay.
I feel it. Got to be careful there. It can't seem like I'm mocking it. Can't seem like I'm making fun. So,
no.
But yes. Once we start talking frivolous nonsense about the Brits, then things go well. Maybe that's our sweet spot.
That's probably what it is. But it's kind of funny how much of the Chris Cliff Paul marketing campaign has been so successful, in the sense that like now they've got like Argyle shoes for Chris Paul, like that pattern way is like a thing now. That's some damn good marketing.
Well, or it's just ubiquitous. I mean, I feel like Kevin Hart, maybe he's successful at what he does. I might not be the target demographic, but there are so many commercials. Does anybody have more commercials for their movies than Kevin Hart does? What's behind that?
It's just, you know, it's not going to be all that good.
So it needs the commercials?
So yeah, you just need to make sure you get people going.
And why romantic comedies? Why is he?
People love a good romantic comedy.
But with Kevin Hart.
I would rather that than him in like an action flick.
Even Soul Plane was a romantic comedy when you really think about it.
Was it, though?
I don't know. I was trying to keep a straight face after I said that. I believe there was a love interest that he had where he was trying to impress this woman, and he left her because he thought that
he's like the airplane, the airline owner.
Which, by the way, the idea that Kevin Hart wouldn't think that he was good enough for a woman and that's why he left her just seems very un-Kevin Hart. He seems like a very confident guy. You know, I've seen him.
Yeah,
I've
he
seen
left
him
her.
Talk about how funny he is.
He left her, right?
Yeah, he left her because he felt like he wasn't good enough for her.
That just reeks of I want to sleep with other women.
It does. It's not a particularly good excuse. I couldn't see many people getting away with that. You'd have to be, you know, you talk about Matthew McConaughey and the romantic comedies. You have to be his level to maybe do that. You'd have to have that sly voice too to pull it off.
Yeah, you definitely. Yeah, and Kevin Hart doesn't have a particularly harmonious voice.
He's not like the romantic lead. He's the guy with another good-looking guy who's the comic foil. I believe that's the angle on it.
Right. He is in a lot of movies now. Good for him. I will say this.
He's working hard.
A lot of people get mad at someone being around so much, but if you can get yourself in with that kind of paycheck in that many movies in a short amount of time, that's just some damn good working.
Dude, and this is why I'm not part of the backlash to people like Nicki Minaj when she's in everything, and she's in the Pepsi commercials, and she's in the... I just see her on my television. She's on the, what is it, The Voice or whatever it's called, and I don't know how she has the time to do that and make all these songs, and even if I don't particularly understand why she's so angry in every song she has, I do respect the work ethic, you know?
I understand the anger.
You do?
She's
understand
just a,
it?
She's a sex object. That's got to get old.
it does have to get old. You know, literally, if you believe the rumors of what that posterior consists of. How do we get to these topics?
I don't know.
That's where the anger comes from, you think? That's where it comes from?
I think so. Doesn't it make sense?
My only issue with her is if you there's a recent song that she has, and I can't say what it is. I can't really say what it is, but it's sort of the idea is that this is how you be like her, a really cool person like her.
Yeah.
And it's really a contingency plan in case something goes wrong. So work on that, Nikki. It doesn't make sense. You're not giving the people the proper instructions.
I think my only problem with her is her music.
What's wrong with it? Unpack it. How exactly are her words twisted?
Mostly that it's not good.
Okay, that's succinct.
I don't need to twist her words. I can just take them at face value and go, nah, that's not very good.
I think she's talented. She can rap really fast. She can
is
rap
that
really
a
fast.
Talent?
It is, and with different voices, different cadences. I mean, we would...
I think rapping is a talent. I don't know that I would say, like, rapping fast is a talent. So, I mean, I don't know that that's one you really develop.
Well, A, you're sexist, you know, right there. For not accepting the best female MC out there. So you should
I'm not a huge Twista fan either.
You're not? Who is? Is anybody all about that guy? Is he anyone's favorite rapper?
There's got to be. There's got to be some. Yeah. But that's the problem. Like, that was the problem with Bone Thugs. That's the problem with Twister. Twista. That's the problem that's the problem with... Well, it was kind of a problem with Busta Rhymes for a while, but he also has plenty of slow songs.
It's fun. Yeah, yeah. And also, he's kind of fun.
Busta's great.
He brings personality to it.
Yeah.
And so does Tech N9ne, as weird as Tech N9ne is.
Yeah.
There's more personality in there.
Yeah, but just, like, that's... There's only so much liking you can do of them because it's so fast.
Yeah. Whenever David Lee scores, I think David Lee's also from he's from Missouri like Tech N9ne is. I want 151 Rum to play whenever that happens, but continue.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
It's not. Not at all.
No, I do think that that holds back people being able to truly be a fanboy, I guess, for lack of a better term, a stan, as the internet would call him.
Yeah.
For that person, whereas like Busta Rhymes has enough variety in his songs that you can appreciate the fast ones, but there's still enough of the slower ones that you can really immerse yourself.
Definitely, you need that mix. You can't just have one skill if you want to bring it back to basketball. I want to add, though, I meant Caribou Lou when I said 151 Rum. I'm a little worried about the British being angry at how I didn't give the right name of the Tech N9ne song, even though they've probably never heard of him. But I'm a little bit worried, so I'm just throwing that in there.
Wow, look at your xenophobia.
I know. You know, there's no logical reason why I should think that they would be the ones angry, and yet I've got my guard up. I'm a little fearful.
There are times, and I hope I don't offend any of our British listeners and followers. There are times I'm still very, very proud of my country's doing in the Revolutionary War. Well, yeah, Braveheart too. I've got a lot of movies, The Patriot, Braveheart. I've got a lot of Mel Gibson movies where my people are foiling the British.
Yeah, yeah. I love, as we've discussed with Braveheart, where the movie says that they won their freedom, and I always think to myself, I don't know, I've seen a map. I've seen a map. I mean, the map says otherwise.
I just think you don't like Mel Gibson. I don't understand why you wouldn't like Mel... Oh, no, never mind. No, I can understand why you wouldn't like Mel Gibson.
I'm just saying, and that's a very entertaining movie. I like Braveheart. I enjoy Braveheart. It's no Space Jam, which we often talk about just supreme derision. But they say at the end, and they finally won their freedom, and it just seems to go against the map. It just seems to go against the map. Maybe I'm reading the map wrong. Maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Yeah, you're no cartographer.
When you say that.
What the hell do you know about maps?
I hate when you say I'm no cartographer. You don't believe in me.
No, I don't. Not in your cartography skills.
Look, I'm just saying, William Wallace, maybe not as triumphant as the movie portrayed him, but it makes for a better movie if you believe he is successful. And Mel Gibson's crazy enough that he probably believes that history ended that way anyway, so he might be in his own little world.
He might have thought he made a documentary.
He probably thought he made a documentary. Right down to William Wallace is so cool that he's which French woman did he seduce? Was it a French queen? Like, yes. What kind of fantasy was this?
Yeah.
This Scotsman is not only fighting for the people and he's salt of the earth and he's not pretentious. Like the British the whole time, he's like, yeah, like that's the tone with which you hear the way the British are portrayed in that movie. And somehow he's this rugged guy who also seduces French nobility. I don't understand how he pulls it all off.
You know, I actually don't understand the hierarchy of I don't understand the hierarchy of, like, once you get below prince and princess,
yeah,
it's like dukes, earls,
duchess.
I don't understand any of it.
See, I don't want my future children to have aspirations that are too high, because that's how you get disappointed. I mean, you see Mark Jackson with the high expectations, what happens there. When my little girl in the future, when I have a child, wants to be a princess, I'm just going to say, hey, can maybe Duchess, you know, maybe go for that. Maybe go for that instead. Don't go too high with a princess.
Yeah.
You got to keep the expectations low.
Dad, I want to get straight A's this year. Let's go for C+.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Then you'll be happy.
Right.
Hey, don't go with this unattainable. Yeah, come on. Stop with that. Go the Duchess route. I don't know what's below Duchess, though. I have no idea.
I just know Serfs are at the bottom.
Yeah, Serfs are. Is there Serfette?
I mean, which I know they're spelled differently, but that makes Serfs Up quite the conundrum.
It does, especially with all the rich people who surf.
It talks about it's an uprising of sorts.
I don't like surfing. I mean,
hold on. I'm glad that we're getting San Diego Ethan out here.
Look,
San Diego Ethan's joining the podcast, everybody.
Hey, everybody. I don't really like going to Wind and Sea because there are too many tourists going there right now.
I only eat a California burrito one way, and I don't agree with the other definitions of a California burrito.
You can't have rice or beans or it's not a burrito. Come on. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, I go through this thing, Zach, where I didn't surf growing up, and I grew up in a beach community, and people go, oh my God, if I was from there, I would have surfed all the time. I would have just been surfing. And it's almost like meeting somebody from West Texas or Texas and going, did you play high school football? Oh, you didn't? You didn't play high school football? Oh man, I would have been the safety on your team. I would have been hitting people left and right. Because really, surf culture in San Diego and the beach community is a competitive culture. You can't just paddle out there if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, no.
You'll get beat up. Yeah. You'll get beat up. There's precious little space. There is a finite amount of space out there on the beach. You can't just paddle out. You'll get a rock thrown through your window. So, people, be understanding. Not everybody from these surfing communities is a surfer, and you shouldn't guilt them about their misspent life, damn it. I might be revealing my insecurities. I might be showing a little too much.
Yeah, that's unlike you. I would say...
totally unlike me.
I've always been worried about interrupting surfing culture simply from the movie Point Break, where they just...
Yeah.
They tried to beat up a guy in the shower for getting into... I don't even really understand what he did wrong.
War Child. Like, what was that?
Yeah, that was... That's a weird thing to call yourself.
Why was everybody getting shot in that movie?
Yeah, there was a...
mishaps.
This is going to sound sacrilegious.
Say it.
I watched the movie Heat yesterday.
Oh.
I don't think it's that good.
It's really of the same weird 90s action overwrought genre that Point Break is. It's not that good.
It's an hour too long. That's a 3-hour movie.
It's an hour too long. Pacino is ridiculous. The scene where he screws up how to say she's got a great, you know, that whole line.
Oh, you can say ass. She's got a great ass. Like that whole thing. Yeah.
And he clearly meant to say he got caught up in between saying great and big, and he makes a funny face. The movie's worth it just for that. It gets
yeah, like I'll watch it. I like it, but I just feel like it's an hour too long. I think the scene where Natalie Portman tries to kill herself is unnecessary.
Definitely. I don't understand these movies where everybody can rob banks in broad daylight in downtown Los Angeles and there aren't helicopters and you're instantly caught. The movies, it's much easier to rob a bank in the movies.
Well, especially, like, there's a full-on shootout between three guys and the L.A. Police Department in the middle of the street. They didn't get a single helicopter over there?
I don't understand. They might be incompetent. Maybe that's the idea. behind it. I'm just always bothered by broad daylight crime. I can't abstract. I can't suspend my disbelief. But when I see things like in The Sopranos where people are getting killed in the Home Depot at 2 p.m. in suburban New Jersey, I just think to myself, a helicopter's following you home, man. There's no way. There's no way you pulled that off.
I mean, after that the big bank heist in Heat, there's still like 40 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
That should be like a next to final scene.
I don't understand some of the drama, too, where they get that cook to be in on it, and then he gets killed, and it's just, why is that even a subplot? What's even the thing there?
Yeah, they get Dennis Haysbert to, like, quit his job and come be the getaway driver, and then the next scene, he's shot within, like, 20 minutes. Spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen this 20-year-old movie.
That's not even very good.
It's fine. I just, like, people talk about it as, like, this great movie. I'm like...
It's just got all the cliches. Is there a single detective out there, and I love True Detective, but it's the same deal. Is there a single detective out there where it's, oh, you know, I just do my job, and I'm happy. I'm pretty happy, and I've got this great family, and things are good. No, it's the job consumes you. It just makes you...
Well, if you're a good detective, of course.
If you're a detective, your obsession with the job makes it that nobody can love you. You love the job. You love the chase more than you love your family, and you'll just phase everybody else out of your life. Why is that the case? Why that? Because it seems like you have a lot of free time. You're not exactly on the 9-to-5. You could theoretically be doing anything when you're chasing these bank criminals. It's not like they're robbing a bank every second.
Right. Yeah.
Keanu Reeves is surfing.
Yes. Well, he was an FBI agent. Thank you very much. He wasn't just
a
detective.
He was an FBI agent.
He's not a detective. So. Let's be respectful for the job.
Sorry.
The job description. And I just the final scene where they're like at the airfield. He's hiding behind. There's about 400 like little shacks you can hide behind at an airfield apparently, and you know the lights come up for when a plane's coming in, and it's that point where he goes to kill Pacino, who's out just standing out in the middle of a field.
Yeah,
but Pacino sees the shadow move because of the lights, and manages to turn around and like shoot him immediately. Like, how bad of a criminal are you?
You're a terrible criminal.
You're a mastermind who just gets got that easily. I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either. It has all those cliches that they're sort of equals and they respect each other in that moment. You know, like they have each other's respect right there. I don't understand why there's just some secret location that you can go to as a criminal where you can get – who was it? You get Ari from Entourage to perform surgery on you at a secret location when you get shot so you don't have to go to a hospital. I didn't know that network existed.
Yeah. And he pulled Val Kilmer away. Val Kilmer gets shot in like the neck or something like that or the shoulder. Just gets like, all right, I've got, you know, we're surrounded by 40 cops who all have machine guns, but we get away because they killed Tom Sizemore?
I think that was the idea. It's much easier to get away in these movies. And also, in the movies, spoiler alert, if you get shot, it either kills you or it's something you recover from completely. There's no in between. You know?
There is no in between. It's pretty easy to do.
No, I can't clutch. I can't make a fist now, or I have this damage, or I walk with a limp now. It's one of the two. It's like you have Andrew Bogut's maybe you woke up with it from sleeping kind of injury, or you're dead.
Oh, right? Look at the full circle.
Oh yeah.
I may do the segues, but you always bring it back full circle.
Full circle. I screwed it up. I said, like, first circle.
Well, no, I could be nice and edit that out and then let you go again, or I could just leave it all in.
No, it's okay. It's hard to say full circle. It's just like how I've discovered it's hard to say Aldridge Lillard three times fast or quickly without sounding drunk. That combination of names, the Blazers have the most you'll sound drunk name of any team.
They really do.
Yeah.
Well, Lillard. Lillard alone is hard to say.
Yeah. Lillard's very difficult to say.
There's too many else.
Just call him Dame.
If it was Lillard, it would be so much easier.
Yeah, but then he'd sound British.
That's true.
I don't know if he'd sound British, but it just sounds
which my people,
Irish.
Which my people have been fighting for hundreds of years.
Irish, I mean. Lillard. It wasn't even an Irish accent.
No, that was really awful.
I don't even know what that was.
All right, well, I think we're done.
I think we're done.
We squeezed out almost an hour.
Yeah, I think we did it. We did it.
It took us an hour and a half, but we got an hour.
Oh, yeah. We can do it. We can talk. We can't guarantee it will be good, but we can talk.
Yeah. Well, Ethan, thank you. We can follow you on Twitter, at Sherwood Strauss. And I will talk at you soon.
I will talk at you soon, Talk Hoops. Peace.